Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches. And that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on our social media platforms at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now Jim Andrews continues his current study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us again on The Final Word. Before I launch today's exposition, I want to make our listening audience aware of some articles that I have written that you might be interested in and tell you how to access them. Over the years, I have done a good deal of writing to prepare resources that I think should be helpful. If you will go to jimandrewsbooks.com, that's one word, jimandrewsbooks.com, you will find there a tab that says articles. If you will open that with your cursor, you will discover there are some articles that I produced over the years that you may find interesting and helpful. I'm not a regular blogger, but when things pop up on my radar that I feel I would like to address in a thoughtful way, I will sometimes produce a longer article. So I'm just happy to share them with you for whatever benefit they may have. Now, back to our current study.
We continue with our newly inaugurated series on 1 Samuel. We're just barely into the first chapter, and we've begun looking at the Hannah narratives and the birth of Samuel, her first son, who came belatedly and not without a lot of suffering beforehand. And that's part of the whole story. The theme of 1 Samuel is that God honors those who honor him, and we will see that all through this great document. The background to this story, if we would review just a minute, is this, that Elkanah, her husband, had two wives. One was named Peninnah, the other Hannah. But we are told twice that the Lord had closed Hannah's womb. This was not because of anything offensive to God in Hannah. This was a sovereign act of God for God's own purposes. But given the assumptions of that day, and sometimes those assumptions were quite right, that it was a sign of God's disfavor, Hannah found herself in a state of complete humiliation and totally aggravated by the insinuations of Peninnah, and found herself quite depressed and distressed. So we read that it happened year after year, as often Hannah went up to the house of the Lord, that Peninnah would provoke her so that she wept and would not eat. This is a woman who's quite depressed. To that, Elkanah, her husband, would say to her, "Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? Why is your heart sad, Hannah? Am I not better to you than 10 sons? Sometimes men just don't get it, do we? Well, Hannah arose after eating and drinking in Shiloh, and now Eli the priest was sitting by the seat by the doorpost of the temple of the Lord. She, greatly distressed, prayed to the Lord, verse 10, and she wept bitterly. And at that time she made a vow, and she said, "Lord of hosts, Lord of armies, Lord of all the forces, visible and invisible, human and material in the universe, the sovereign God, all-powerful, controls everything. If you indeed will look upon the affliction of thy maidservant and remember me, and if you will not forget thy maidservant, but will give thy maidservant a son, then I'll give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and a razor shall never come upon his head." Now Elkanah was a Levite. He was of the priestly tribe. Well, it came about, as she continued praying before the Lord, that Eli, the high priest, was observing. He was watching her mouth. He saw it moving. As for Hannah, she was speaking in her heart. There, by the way, is a good indication that silent prayer is just as good as oral prayer, because God is not unable to know the thoughts of our hearts as well as the words on our lips. So Hannah, as she was speaking in her heart, only her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. So Eli thought she was drunk. Then Eli, getting a little amped up about it, said to her, "How long will you make yourself drunk? Put away your wine from you." But Hannah answered and said, No, my lord, I'm a woman oppressed in spirit. I've drunk neither wine nor strong drink. All I'm doing here is pouring out my soul before the Lord. Please do not consider the maidservant a worthless woman, for I have spoken until now out of my great concern and provocation. Well, Eli, newly chastened, answered and said, Go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant your petition which you have asked of him. And she said, Let your maidservant find favor in your sight. So the woman went away, and now, having poured out her heart to God, she ate, and her face was no longer sad. Well, there's a lot for us to learn in this narrative. We had pointed out that if anyone claims to live in a spiritual zone, free of emotions like this at a time, emotions of depression, that person is not a saint. That person, I say, is an ain't. That person is either a liar or a zombie. The most spiritual-minded people you've ever met are always the most real people you will ever know. I was saying as the last program closed that we should note in passing that if Hannah made any error here, and we all do, it was doing what is so natural to us when life threatens to overwhelm us. Hannah, like many of us, spent more time counting her burdens than her blessings. It's all right to pour out before the Lord our heavy burdens, but we must not neglect also counting our blessings. Peninnah evidently had an abundance of children, but she received a lot less love from her husband. Hannah had no children, but she was the favored one with Elkanah, and she had a very considerate husband whose love was greater than 10 sons. Despite that, she saw her cup half empty, when she could have moderated the worst of her pain by seeing it half full. What if she had had no children and had a husband who disfavored her? The more you dwell on your liabilities and forget to tally your assets, folks, the greater your poverty will seem. So learn to count your blessings. I do not mean to turn a blind eye to your burdens. We read the Psalms, and certainly the psalmist did not. We have burdens, we look them in the eye, and sometimes they are very heavy, they are grievous, and take those to the Lord. I'm just saying, don't forget to tally up your blessings. I have a phrase for it, and that's polish your monuments. I'll refer to that later in this chapter, but I've written a book entitled Polishing God's Monuments, Pillars of Hope for Punishing Times. I'd recommend anybody who's tasted of the fountain of pain and suffering get that book. But Hannah certainly saved her bacon by what she did do. She took her burdens right where we ought to take them, and she placed them before the Lord. She didn't fake it before God or man. This woman freely confessed her emotional condition in all of its dark colors, just like the psalmist knew. Hannah didn't try to put a face of a positive mental attitude, PMA, on her unhappy circumstances. She didn't hypocritically pretend that her faith was so deep and so rich that no amount of abuse or misuse could rattle her cage. I just hate that. I suspect you do too. We need to give people a little room here. We can get righteously angry, but we can't stay there, or it sours like milk, which is set out too long. We can feel bitter in soul, but we can't afford to nurse that bitterness and to massage resentment, or the heart, folks, will go toxic every time. We can feel despair. But I'll tell you what we can't do. We just can't sit around and constantly count our losses, or we will become a loser in short order. I'm saying we need to follow Hannah's example in such cases. We may not have had Hannah's problems, but we may have felt Hannah's grief, her sorrow, her burdens, her humiliation in some situation or other. She knew the pain of her heart, and she took it to the Lord. She was not a perfect woman. She was a great and godly woman. And her biggest mistake was just not also learning to count, to tally her blessings, and she had some. Now I want to talk about her earnest supplication here in this first chapter of 1 Samuel. Folks, when we are subjected to the trauma of misuse, abuse, misrepresentation, and misunderstanding, and at some point most or all of us will be, and probably more than once, or twice, or three times over the course of our lives. In those situations, you and I have one of four turns available to us. One, we can turn in upon ourselves and become such bitter and sour people that nobody can stand us. You see all kinds of people who've gone there. You see people who've had what they regard as harsh and bitter lives. And the older they get sour, they get more bitter. I see that more and more in the senior generation in this country. I remember when I was a youngster, and that's been, I'll tell you, quite some time back, I loved older people because they always seemed, I don't mean in every case, but in most cases, they always seemed sweet and kind and gentle. But I'll tell you, that's no longer the case. I remember when I came to Portland, I hadn't been here very long, still had Colorado license plates on my car, and I went to one of the main local markets called Fred Meyer's, which is big here in the Northwest, now owned by Kroger, but still called Fred Meyer's. I'd been used to my shopping habits in Colorado and in Denver, and there, in those days, if you went to King Super or one of the big outlets, why, you brought your grocery baskets out into the parking lot, you unloaded them into your car, and as I remember, gee, it's been a long time, but there were always kids, somebody out there to grab them and to take them right back, and you didn't have to take them anywhere. And I assumed, in my naivete, that that was the same at Fred Meyer anywhere. So I just took my basket and pushed it up in front of my car after I'd unloaded it. The car right in front of me, parked face to face, so to speak, were two old ladies. They looked to be, I'm guessing, you never know, somewhere between 65 and 75, in there somewhere-ish. This was my introduction to many of the elderly that I meet in the Northwest. And this is the most unchurched state, along with Washington, in the entire Union. And I'm telling you, it shows over most of the adult population. Just a general unhappiness. Lady rolled down her window and stuck it out, and she says, and I'm sure she was seeing the Colorado plate because there was a big deal in Oregon about that time about Californians coming here, and here's a Colorado car, and stuck her head out the window and says, "Why don't you take the thing back where it belongs?" I shouldn't have said it, but I was stunned for a minute, and then I looked back at her and I said, "Dear, tell me, whatever happened to nice old ladies?" Well, this is a classic example of somebody who is nursing their wounds and they think they've had a bitter and harsh experience and they turn in on themselves and they become so bitter and so sour that nobody can stand them. Now, that's one way you can handle these issues. Another way is that we can just turn on our enemies and become just like them, those who create the pain and cause us sorrow and grief. A third thing, we can turn away from God and we can abandon any hope of relief or redemption. We can start out, "Why me? Why me? Why me?" And as I say in my book, Polishing God's Monuments, that has to be the most useless question ever addressed to God and the universe. It's totally unproductive. Get the book and I'll explain why. Don't ever say, "Why me?" In the first place, why not us? We deserve nothing. We are sinful people. We are broken people. We are natively rebels before God. There is not anything any of us deserve. God is not morally beholding to any of his creatures. It goes from "Why me?" to "Where is God? Where are you? What have you done for me today?" And then finally to disillusionment and the abandonment of faith and hope and any prospect of redemption. Or fourthly, we can do what Hannah did. We can turn to God and we can entrust the resolution of our circumstances to his love, his power, and his wisdom. We can leave it to God, take our burdens to the Lord, leave it to him to resolve the issue in his own good time and to sustain us until that good time. Well, here in this narrative that we just read, 1 Samuel chapter 1, verses 9 through 18, we meet up with what we often encounter in life, certainly Hannah did here, an unfair and hasty accusation. We've all heard that old adage that when it rains, it pours. Sometimes things just seem to come in bunches for some reason. I don't know why. I've often noted that when there are, for example, airplane crashes, and others have noted this too, sometimes they seem to come in threes. That's no law, but I've just noted how, whether they're earthquakes or famines or tornadoes or other devastating things, sometimes they just seem to come in bunches. And in times of spiritual distresses, things have a way of seeming to get worse before they get better. Folks, that's just God testing our perseverance. Remember Job? Never forget that document. One shape that this takes, this testing of our perseverance, is that people, some of them well-meaning, others with no good motives, oftentimes unwittingly or wittingly, as in the case of Penina here, have a way of piling on and aggravating our injuries at the worst times. In my book, Polishing God's Monuments, I have a whole chapter called The Penina Factor, devoted to this very thing. This too, this piling on and aggravating of our injuries at what seem to us to be the worst times, this too God allows to test the perseverance of his people. In Hannah's case, it was pain enough to be barren in a culture where childlessness was viewed as a sign of God's disfavor. And in fact, that might have been the case in many instances under the Old Covenant, for that was one of the punishments when Israel was disobedient and disregarded the stipulations of the Old Covenant. But not necessarily in every case. You couldn't say in every case, because a woman was childless, it was a sign of the curse of God. But in that culture, one tended to be guilty until proven innocent, you might say, and that was a heavy burden and humiliation for Hannah. The burden of proof, more or less, was upon the fruitless woman. And if that wasn't enough, in Hannah's case, there was this Penina, always taking cruel pot shots at Hannah. They're reminding Hannah that she was inadequate as a wife, that she lacked the right stuff to honor her husband with children, that maybe she was a hypocrite, and if not, why didn't God give her children? That kind of thing. Well, if that wasn't enough of a burden for one woman's shoulders, now here comes the high priest, as she's standing in the very temple precincts pouring out her broken and distressed heart to God. Eli sees only her lips moving and her distraught body language, and like many people do, the high priest hastily jumps to the unwarranted conclusions that this woman is just another lush who needs a verbal shellacking. So he puts two and two together, how often we've seen it, gets five, concluding that she's stoned and making a mockery of the temple precincts. I've seen that again and again, where words are misunderstood, actions are misunderstood, and people just pile on the pain. And here Eli does it. My daughter and son-in-law, who are closely interwoven with the fabric of my book, Polishing God's Monuments, Pillars of Hope, Punishing Times, I tell how my son-in-law has for 20 years, lay out of the marketplace and be a full-time caretaker for my daughter. A neighbor, totally unaware of their circumstances, and I think this neighbor, even if he were aware, it would not have mattered, but he accused Paul, would rail at him from across the street of being a malingerer, which was the very last thing Paul happened to be. I know parents who have estranged children, and they've done everything possible to make things better, and absolutely every move they make for reconciliation gets misconstrued and misrepresented and twisted in the worst lights. If they do nothing, they're damned for indifference. If they do something, well, their motives are slammed. They can't win. The burden is terrible. Pain beyond words. I know a pastor and his family who served a small church where their salary was so chintzy that it fell below the poverty line, though the church was able to do better than that. They did not furnish him with any health or disability insurance. His family was always one serious health crisis from ruination. The upside is that their low income put them in the state of Washington in the range for the state safety net, which covered catastrophic illness for the poor. He didn't complain about this, but he endured it cheerfully and trust God to protect them otherwise. One day a church leader, if you can believe this, one that the pastor actually regarded as a friend, invited him to lunch. He had found out, that the pastor was under state protection, so to speak. And the miserable fellow upbraided the poor pastor, and he was poor, for taking money from the poor so he could have insurance. The pastor told him, I kind of thought I was in that poverty range there. And the man's answer was to sell his home, which it so happened his in-laws had helped him buy, was to sell his home, move down to a lower rent district, and use the savings for insurance. Can you believe that? Well, that is piling on. That's what Hannah's getting here. The pain, the sacrifice, the humiliation was enough without some righteous brother, in the case of this pastor, making him out as a welfare cheat when he and his church were too cheap to do what was right. And the pastor was so obliging as to bear it all as suffering for Jesus' sake. I tell you, people, persons who do that will give account for that kind of thing. Well, to Eli's credit, he reversed his hasty condemnation when she humbly corrected his misconstruction of his ideas. Sometimes we don't get the benefit of somebody with the better spirit of Eli. But it reminds us it's better not to be too quick to make judgments about motives and manners that we lack evidence to support. I've done it, you've done it, and I've been embarrassed, and you've probably been embarrassed. If we're too overhasty, it is to our credit to acknowledge that we have overstepped the boundaries of propriety and reverse ourselves, which is exactly what Eli did. When Hannah explained, the man exchanged an official benediction for an officious condemnation. As God's official earthly mediator, he invoked God's blessing upon her, and God heard Eli. Eli was acting in his official capacity as God's representative. But that doesn't change the fact it's still very painful when your whole identity is as a servant of God. And that was the case with Hannah. For God's people, of all people, to misjudge you and tar what is good with the brush of evil. I've been there, you've been there, a lot of us have been there, and we know just how painful that is. Well, at last we see a blessed stroke of divine intervention, but in God's own time. In answer to her prayer and in response to her vow, we see in verses 19 through 20 that it came about in due time after Hannah had conceived. She gave birth to a son and she named him Samuel, saying, "Because I've asked him of the Lord." The name was in some way related to her asking. God gave her what would be a special son who would play a critical role in preparing the nation for its role as a vehicle in divine redemption and ushering in the Savior of the world. This son, whom she named Samuel, was an important player on the stage of world history looked at from the standpoint of divine revelation. Hannah had no idea of the greatness of the son that she would bear. But Hannah's experience reminds us of a phenomenon that we see played out again and again in the scriptures, and that is God's richest blessings are always shaped, folks, in the crucible of pain. Godly perseverance through great pain and humiliation seems regularly, I didn't say without exception, but regularly in biblical history to be answered eventually with some gracious reward that dwarfs the suffering that was its conduit. And in fact, this is in microcosm the story of our salvation in Jesus Christ. For in Christ, the sufferings of this present world are not worthy to be compared to the glory that shall be revealed in us. People who bear their pain in a godly manner will always find that God will rescue great gain from the savage jaws of pain. So let Hannah be our symbol of hope. Her God, folks, is your God. God's character has not changed, nor will it. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. His eternal purpose has not changed. If God loved Hannah, yet saw fit to inflict pain on her for his own secret reasons, God reserves the right, as his purposes require, to make you and me burden bearers of his glory. If he helped Hannah in his time, he will help us in his good time. Meanwhile, let us wait upon the Lord. Folks, let us not turn inward, nor turn upon others, nor turn back from God, but let us turn to God in our affliction and lay all of our cares and consternation at his feet, for he cares for us. In doing so, let's always remember the theme of the book, God will honor those who honor him. On the other hand, those who despise him, he will lightly esteem. Meanwhile, remember, God will test our loyalty. Let us stand up to the test by the supply of his Spirit of grace and wait for the salvation of the Lord, both in the micro and macro senses of the term. Thank you, friends, for joining us on The Final Word. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. Our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program has ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.